sensor pulses. In fact, their shields were down, all their navigation lights were on full, and the only active sensors they had warmed up was the system that swept the area for incoming hazards like space rocks. "It feels odd to be this close," Reed said under her breath. "We are all one big, happy family now," I whispered. "A family with that old uncle who gets drunk and starts a fight at a holiday dinner? When my Uncle Edgar got drunk, he told funny stories we kids weren't supposed to hear. I wouldn't bet on the spiders telling jokes. Probably a good point." We announced our intention to go through the wormhole first. The cruisers were to wait for our signal. The other side was the wormhole closest to the Rindaloo Central world, called Illustria, or that's what the name sounds like when a translator AI pronounces it for us. We emerged at a point that was not on that wormhole's current figure-eight pattern, so there was a very low risk of us encountering a ship on the other side. The area was clear. We signaled the cruisers to follow us, then Skippy pulled the plug on the shortcut. "Minister Jastigelian, please proceed when you are ready. Your ship should be able to reach Illustria in a single jump from here."
"General Bishop, the wormhole shortcut is a remarkable achievement."
"Meh," Skippy shrugged with false modesty. "As my awesomenesses go, it's a party trick. But it impresses the monkeys."
"It impressed me also. General, I will contact you within one day. That is 22 of your hours?"
"Yes, thank you." Chapter 35. Holy shit. 5 days later, the spiders provided a solution for cracking the defenses around a Maxalt's regional fleet base like Omaharakon. Despite possessing the highest overall level of technology in the Milky Way, the Rindaloo's solution was surprisingly simple. They planned to use brute force. Specially modified disposable ships, designated as door knockers, would power through a tiny opening in the distortion field to jump into the heart of the SD network, opening a door just a bit for more and more ships to jump in. The second wave of ships would be dedicated, disposable arsenals, stuffed with missiles, and not much else. Like many military engagements, the battle for control of space around the planet Omaharakon would be a matter of numbers, throwing so many missiles, sensor jammers, and decoys into the fight that the SD network would be overwhelmed and ground down missile by missile until the distortion field was weak enough for warships to jump in. At that point, our ships would be mopping up the scattered and confused remnants of the SD network with the defense system unable to coordinate a response. That's how the Rindaloo destroyed the Doomsday Ark ships, the warships that were there to protect the Ark ships, and the space docks that had constructed the Ark ship weapons. Minister Jastigelian proudly told me that battle had gone as their tactical AIs predicted, with more than 98% accuracy. That was impressive. By day 6, we not only had a solution, we had a conditional commitment from the Rindaloo to provide limited material and logistical support for a raid against an unnamed Maxalt's regional fleet base. The condition? That the target be revealed before we jumped into battle. I mean, that's just a duh, of course. My intention was to name the target after the task force had assembled at some yet-to-be-determined staging and training site. Plans could be revised and refined as needed without adding an OPSEC risk. Unfortunately, I would have to tell the spiders thank you, but no, we couldn't do it. Why? Because of the discussion I had with Frey on day 6. Frey was already in my office when I walked in. I was feeling good as I sat down. The spiders had offered not only advice and intel, they would be providing ships and weapons. My star team leader had requested a meeting just before dinner time, and I had worked through lunch, so I was hungry, but Frey had insisted we talk soon. "Frey?" I nodded to her, distracted as I pulled out a drawer, hoping to find candy or crackers or anything to snack on. Nothing. That wasn't enough to sour my mood. Had I eaten all the snacks, or was Skippy screwing with me by sending a bot into my office to steal my junk food? That's something I should ask Bilby about. "You updated your plan?" Skippy told me to expect we'll achieve space supremacy around Omaha by T+2 hours. "I did. We did," she corrected herself. "Skippy and Bilby helped with the modeling. Sir, I'm very reluctant to say this." That wasn't good, and suddenly I wasn't hungry. "Okay." I didn't try to guess what she meant, and I kept what I hoped was a neutral expression. "I'm listening." "There is no way to achieve the objective. Not," she quickly added, "with the required probability of success." Shit. was my automatic and unfortunate response. What she referred to was my criteria for a plan I could approve. It must have at least a 95% probability of finding the Collector, taking it from the Maxalks, getting it into low orbit and aboard a starship that could jump away, all without damaging the Collector. There were a lot of moving pieces, and every phase of the plan had to work with nearly perfect precision. There was a little room for the usual unexpected challenges. We couldn't rely on our typical creativity in overcoming obstacles. A simple, tiny squirrel bot had almost fried the core of the archive we raided. That would have been a very disappointing setback, but the Maxalks have other archives we could have hit later. As far as Skippy knew, there was exactly one Collector available to us. Originally, I had told Frey the mission needed to have a 99% probability of success. That was an unrealistic goal, and I had let her talk me down to 95. It still made me sick to accept a 5% chance of never finding the spinner, never stopping the outsider from opening the door to an invasion. She opened her laptop. Can I show you? Walk me through it. The best result in a scenario that assumed the Maxalts would commit an unlikely series of stupid, clumsy errors yielded a 77% probability of success. The number I focused on was the flip side of that math, a 23% probability of failure. The failures were generated along multiple paths, stealth dropships intercepted before Star Team boots hit the ground, the team taking a hit from a missile or even old-fashioned artillery while on the ground, the battle in the underground storage bunker damaged or destroyed the Collector. Most often, when a scenario failed, it was a dropship being shot down during the ascent into orbit. Finally, Valkyrie could take a bad hit when we jumped in to recover the dropship. She showed me one scenario after another. Maybe she was hoping I would see something she had missed. I had to disappoint her. She had covered every contingency. There were just too many opportunities for the op to go sideways in a hurry. A single Maxalt soldier with a shoulder-launched missile could pop out of nowhere, and bam, the dropship carrying the Collector goes down in flames. Frey nudged the laptop away from her. I would be willing to send my team in with a 77% probability and trust skill and training to win the day, but that leaves an unacceptable level of risk that the Collector will be damaged or destroyed. Sir, did I miss something? If you did, I don't see it. Skippy, do you have anything to add? The modeling is 100% accurate, he sniffed. Of course he did. Joe, the problem is that to ensure an almost perfect probability of success, we have to suppress the firepower of an entire planet, a world that is a regional fleet base, and so is packed with weapons. A single jackass with a missile or a stealth fighter that evades our sensor coverage could ruin the entire op. Right, yes, I see that. Frey, thank you for your work on this. Let me think on it for a while, then I'll get back to you. She nodded slowly. I know this isn't what you hoped the stars would tell you, but I appreciate that you didn't come in here with a nice story full of gung-ho bullshit. Fortune favors the bold, that sort of thing. I've seen too many ops go sideways to risk the Collector getting damaged or lost. We'll find another way to do this. Joe, Skippy called as I slowly got up from my chair after Frey had left. Where are you going? To get coffee. Although really I just need to think, and I do that better on my feet. Sit down, please. There is something we need to discuss. My brain screamed, what the fuck is the problem this time? I kept that to myself. Okay, just me, or should I call Frey or Reed back in here? Just you. There is a way to achieve the objective, or accomplish the task, or whatever you call getting the job done. Yes, I saw, but even the best scenarios have too much possibility of something going wrong, and no, you did not see, because Frey didn't model the scenario I'm talking about. That was so unlike Skippy, I blinked while staring at him, trying to think of what to say. You withheld information from Frey? I did not withhold anything from her. I extrapolated from her planning. All right, just tell me. Joe, I know you. You are not going to like this. I felt a chill run up my spine. Usually you say, well, heh-heh, before something I'm not going to like. There is nothing remotely funny about this. You're scaring me, Skippy. While I show you a plan that can work the way you want, can you not do your usual thing of interrupting me with stupid questions? Just watch and listen and save your questions for the end. Can you do that? You're sure this plan will work for real? It's not just a nice war game model?
There are various scenarios that result in 97 to 98.4% probability of success, but they are all versions of the same basic plan. This assumes the Rindaloo can crack the disruptor field and degrade the SD network to the point where the UN Navy can mop up the orbital defenses, and that the Maxalts do not have a fleet in system which you keep telling me not to worry about. Don't worry about it. You have an actual plan to make a fleet conveniently disappear from its home base? I'm working on it. For now, assume that fleet is busy elsewhere. Once the Maxalts realize you are assembling an assault force, they will move to protect their most important assets, which includes... Listen, I'll make this simple. We are assuming we won't have to deal with both a state-of-the-art SD network and a fleet, because if the fleet is at Omaha, the op won't proceed. Got it? You are counting on another miracle. Fine. Whatever. Okay, so... He showed me 6 variations on the same basic assault plan. They all met my requirements. I did not like any of them. This is a no-go. I gave him the knife hand in the middle of the 6th simulation. It works, Joe. You have seen it. Can you deny that it works on a tactical level, not a moral level? Thank you for helping. This is not something we can do. Clearly, we can do it, so what you really mean is it's not an order you can give. I don't expect you to understand that. What I understand is I have provided a plan that you agree meets all of your criteria, and I understand that without the Collector we have no way to stop the Outsider, which at this very moment is working to modify the array and open a door to an invasion force we cannot hope to stop. The UN will provide the ships and the troops. The Rindaloo astonishingly are willing to get off their asses and help. So the only issue is you are uncomfortable with your role in the plan? That is not the... This is what he warned me about. Skippy muttered. Warned? Who is he? You told someone about... I didn't tell anyone anything. His avatar drifted toward the ceiling. This... I didn't want to do this at all. He insisted, and now I see he was right. Skippy, who are you talking about? I'll leave you to it. Just... His avatar faded out. Call me when you're done. Hello? A familiar voice called from the chair in the corner. What the f... Smythe. Jeremy Smythe. Colonel Jeremy Smythe, I reminded myself. It wasn't him sitting across the desk, of course. The avatar had a faintly fuzzy outline like a force ghost from Star Wars. The holographic avatars created by Skippy appeared to be real three-dimensional objects. Even in the holo-displayed tanks, objects and icons had sharp, well-defined edges. So the fuzzy glow around Smythe was an effect, a signal to put me at ease. Instantly I knew I was looking at an avatar, not an android or some other recreation of the SAS soldier I had served with for so long. I would salute, the knot Smythe continued with a wry smile. But he plucked at the uniform top, which moved convincingly under his holographic fingers. As I'm not actually here, that would be silly. Why are you here? I asked. Not pleased, but willing to give it a minute before dismissing the avatar. The reason I didn't explode at Skippy was the beer can had said he insisted. The he had to be Smythe. So the star team leader had considered creating an avatar of himself to be important for whatever reason. I had to respect his judgment. Apparently you need me at the moment. Well, to be accurate, he held up an index finger. Skippy believes you need to speak with me. This was your idea? To set up an avatar? Yes. No. He looked at the ceiling. It might have been Skippy's suggestion. I don't recall exactly, since, as we both know, I'm not here. So this is Skippy screwing with me? Not at all. I do recall a significant time commitment in setting up, testing, and debugging this system. It was, he frowned, a delightful experience. You would have preferred to have been skydiving from orbit? I would have preferred almost anything. Okay, you do sound like Smythe. I know this isn't you. There was a catch in my throat, and for a moment I couldn't speak. Thank you, anyway, for making the effort. You are very welcome, General. I considered creating this avatar to be my duty. So you can advise Colonel Frey? He lifted an eyebrow. Frey is a colonel now? Good for her. And an excellent choice by the Army. Is she still with the stars? She leads ST Razor aboard Valkyrie. He frowned. I'm not familiar with Team Razor.
The designation ST-Alpha has been unofficially retired, I explained. Razor was Earth's rapid reaction force. Now they're back aboard Valkyrie with Frey. The special mission group has been stood up again. Back in the saddle again, he flashed a tight grin. The emulation of the Avatar was so good I was uncomfortable talking with him. With it, I reminded myself. Nah, that was bullshit. If Smythe had gone through the effort of setting up an Avatar, he would not have approved its release until he was satisfied it worked properly. That meant I should listen to him. Have you ever advised Frey? No, she doesn't know about this Avatar, and she shouldn't hear of it. Please, he added. That was an easy request for me to honor. The last thing Frey needed was to hear that the legendary former commander was available to provide advice, or to interfere with her leading ST Razor. That was her team. I won't mention it. Colonel Smythe. Again, I had to pause for a breath. It was not easy to sit across a desk from him, something I had done many, many times, back when he was alive. Do you know why you're here now? Why, Skippy, I waved a hand. Activated you? Oh, his eyes fluttered rapidly in a creepy Matrix-style effect that I'm sure was something Skippy programmed in to show the Avatar was receiving an update. He knew I would understand the reference. Smythe's eyes stilled, and he looked at me. A threat from beyond the galaxy? Did the Merry Band of Pirates not have enough threats inside the Milky Way to keep you busy? Yes, but our threat from outside the galaxy coupon was set to expire, so we had to use it now. Your sense of humor has not changed, he smiled. I appreciated that. You did? That surprised me. I thought you considered my humor to be inappropriate and unserious. At first I did. Then I saw that when you could joke even in the worst situation, it meant you hadn't lost your nerve. Or that I had lost focus, I admitted. The military teaches us how to focus. What training can't teach is what makes you such a successful commander. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. That is an American expression. I do agree with the sentiment. You are most effective when you are not focusing completely on a problem. Right. But the current problem, would it help if I don't think about it for a while? You don't need to think about it. You already know what you have to do. That put me on guard and pissed me off. Is that Skippy talking? Ask yourself what I would say if I were really here. Shit. I knew the answer to that question. This is just all kinds of wrong. It makes you uncomfortable, he nodded. It will make me hate myself. I have sometimes found it useful to use a decision matrix. You did? My mental image of Smythe did not include him using job aids from a PowerPoint slide. Occasionally. He meant almost never. Will the proposed action achieve the objective within the acceptable risk parameters? It will. Is there a workable alternative? No. Well, I thought there was. I thought we had time to bring a sentinel with us. Now the outsider is forcing my hand. And to answer your question, Colonel Frey showed me her team can't get the Collector. You know about that? I do, and I have reviewed Frey's plans, and I agree the risk of damage to the Collector is too great. This is a case where who dares loses. He paraphrased the Special Air Service's motto to mean the opposite. It surprises me to hear you say that. I was always honest about what could be achieved and what couldn't. That was a statement I couldn't dispute. On his last mission, he had been clear that his team wasn't ready, that the opposition was too strong. He went anyway, at my insistence. Not because I believed ST-Alpha could win, but because we had no alternative. Like now. Sir, he continued, is this a fight that is necessary or an optional mission? Necessary. We're lucky that Skippy identified the location of a Collector. It's the only one he knows of. And we are out of time. If you prefer, I could show you the decision matrix. I can see it in my head, thanks. Those two stars on your uniform are there because the Army expects you to make the hard decisions whether you like them or not. Biting my lower lip, I reminded myself the Smythe I was talking with was a subminder, or something like that. The Avatar had also been programmed to be him, to think like Smythe, so I shouldn't ignore his advice. Did Skippy activate you to perform a backbone transplant on me? He smiled, something the real Smythe hadn't done often. But when he had, it was always worth seeing. Sufficient backbone was never an issue for you. What you lacked was self-confidence, though you overcame that toward the... A shadow fell across his face. He had meant to say, toward the end. His end. In later years, I suggested a neutral way to express his thought. Yes. His eyes drifted away from me, far away. Do you know how, you... No, he snapped. I requested Skippy not include those details. It is not relevant and could be a distraction. I am here to assist you. I appreciate it. Though you don't like it. I don't. You have stated your admiration for Eisenhower. In the invasion of Normandy, it was necessary for airborne troops to prevent the Germans from rushing reinforcements to the beaches, or the landing force might be crushed before they could get inland. Shortly before D-Day, the air commander requested that Eisenhower cancel the glider and paratrooper drops because the casualties were projected to be 75% to 90%. Eisenhower knew that if he ordered an air assault, the majority of the troops boarding those planes would not come back. His order stood. The invasion was successful, as you know, and the casualty rate for airborne troops was less than 10%. Your point is, Ike would have let his order stand even if the projected casualties had been correct? He would have, and as the commander he should have. The invasion had to succeed, and far more men would have been killed on the beaches if the Germans had brought in additional forces. I hear you. This is different. In Normandy, the airborne troops had a real, vital mission. So were the landing force at Omaha. Omaha. He cocked his head. Did you choose that name deliberately? I wasn't thinking about it at the time. Of the five beaches assaulted on D-Day, Omaha had been the toughest fight. Omaharicon, you know, so Omaha just popped into my head. It's too late to change it now. Can the mission succeed without an orbital assault on Omaharicon? You know it can't. So do you. Right. This is my burden to bear. It is, as long as you wear those stars on your uniform. The Avatar stood up. If that is all, sir... You leaving already? Seeing him go again was too painful. He nodded. If you need me again, you need only call. Not for karaoke night, though. I think not. I stood up and saluted him. My hand shook slightly. Colonel Smythe, you are... I almost couldn't say it. Dismissed. The Avatar faded out. I sat back down. For a long time, I couldn't do or say anything. I hoped Skippy hadn't created other avatars. Skippy, I finally slid down in the chair until my head touched the bulkhead behind me. That was a shitty thing to do. His avatar appeared on the desk. It wasn't me, Joe. I know. You know? Then why blame me for... I'm not blaming you. It felt like an ambush, and I'm pissed off and kinda hurt, and I want to lash out at someone. You're here, so... Ah, gotcha. You can't hit back at Smythe because he is not here. I can't hit back at him because he was only trying to help me, and damn it, he is right. So how is that a bad thing? Now I have to do something that I know is the right thing to do, even though it feels like something I will regret for the rest of my life. To achieve the objective, I have to beat that asshole senior officer who doesn't give a shit about the people under his command. You do care, Joe. That's the problem. Promise me you don't have any other avatars like that. Digital versions of former members of the crew, I mean. I do not. Sometimes I wish I did. I miss them, Joe. Me too. Creating an avatar was Smythe's idea. He believed the two of you worked well together, made each other better soldiers. I made him better? You did. He greatly admired you. He told me that. How much of him is in that avatar? According to him, the emulation is accurate, enough that he was satisfied with releasing it. We kept updating and tweaking it, of course. When was the last update? 9 days before Star Team Alpha went into the Elder Space Dock. Successfully, he added. So it doesn't know about... He insisted the avatar should not be aware of the time and manner of his death. Pondering the past was not the purpose of that system. Joe, I know seeing him again was painful for you. Did it help? I hate to say it, but yes. He is available any time. What I learned is he is not here to help me create a plan or to decide how to act. His purpose is to guide me toward accepting a decision I have already made. Skippy nodded. He believed he could help you gain perspective. He certainly did that. Is Frey busy right now?
She's in her office writing a report.
Ask her to meet me here, please. I want you to show her your plan. She won't like it any more than you do. That's why it has to be my call. If Frey agrees this is workable, I'll bring Reed into the discussion.
Righty-o! Wait, one more thing.
What?
Don't bring Smythe back unless I request to speak with him, got that?
Loud and clear.
We're doing this, I said, with my elbows on my desk, head cradled in my hands. Eyes closed, shutting out the world, pretending reality didn't exist. We are really doing this.
Skippy reminded me that reality doesn't care whether you believe in it or not.
The way you said that, I couldn't tell if it was a statement or a question.
Statement. It sounded like a question. That's because I can't believe I'm giving the order, but I am.
This is eating at you, isn't it?
I hope so.
I don't understand. If this didn't bother me, then I truly would be the callous asshole people will think I am when this is over.
Okay. I lifted my head and dragged my elbows off the desk, hearing my mother reprimand me all the times when I put my elbows on the dinner table.
We need a staging base, and for training.
A planet, I assume?
It could be a moon, if you can find one that meets our needs.
Our needs are what, exactly?
Gravity and thickness of atmosphere similar to Omaharicon. The air doesn't have to be breathable, but it can't be a thick fog that impairs vision. For training, we need to replicate conditions at the target as closely as possible.
Okay, got it. What else?
Isolated. Uninhabited and no sensor coverage. A place no one can get to without temporarily activating a dormant wormhole.
Whoa, your shopping list could be tough to fill.
Why must the place be inaccessible?
So once the task force is there, no one can leave after I reveal the target. We all go there, we all leave together, and proceed directly to Omaha. Zero possibility of information leakage.
Joe, this operation will involve a lot of ships. You will have to allow for the possibility that some ships will suffer mechanical failures during the flight to Omaha, or that a ship or two will have a glitch and emerge from jump off course.
Right. So while we're at the staging area, I want you to hack into every ship. Ours, the Spiders, every ship. The entire task force will get navigation instructions from you or Bilby. No independent actions will be allowed. Any ship that falls behind will disable itself, and we will send a search and rescue force later.
That's harsh. The Rindaloo in particular will not like your conditions.
I will inform them on my conditions after we get to the staging site and you have control of their navigation systems.
That is remarkably ruthless. What's got into you?
To make this work, I have to do a rotten, dirty thing that isn't worthy of this uniform, so I do not give a shit whether anyone is upset by other orders I have to give.
Gotcha. Basically, you're looking for another planet like the original Club Skippy.
I hadn't thought of it that way, but yes, that's exactly what I'm looking for.
Except this time, the site could be a habitable moon.
If that moon is currently a base for constructing a Death Star, it's off the list.
What, there's no Death Star, but there are Ewoks?
No Ewoks either. You can't trust those little fuckers.
Am I asking for the impossible?
No, I already started compiling your list back when you announced your plan to pull the civilians off Jaguar.
You did?
It seemed a prudent precaution.
There is no plan to evac anyone.
Whatevs.
I anticipated you would want an alternate relocation site.
Thank you. Listen, I know habitable worlds are valuable, so I won't be disappointed if...
Well, there is one candidate that is pretty much perfect, either as a temporary staging site or for a long-term secure sanctuary.
Secure from conventional threats, not from an entity like the Outsider.
Pretty much perfect?
There are a few negatives. Getting there from Earth will require me to create two wormhole shortcuts. I have to bypass around a network that refuses my commands. From the far end of the second shortcut, it is a two-day flight to a dormant wormhole that connects to the dormant wormhole near the candidate star system.
That does sound complicated. How far is this place from an active wormhole?
7,000 light-years.
7,000?
The entire Milky Way galaxy was roughly 90,000 light-years across, though the disk outside the center was only 1,000 or so light-years thick. It blew my mind, considering how dense the Elder Wormhole network was, that anywhere in the galaxy could be that far from an active wormhole.
Where the hell is this place?
In a small star cluster off the rim of the galaxy. Follow the Sagittarius arm to its outer limit and keep going.
That answered the question. The planet was not in the galaxy. And no one has ever been there. The closest wormhole has been dormant for 80 million years. Well, if anyone on that planet ordered a pizza delivery, it is totally going to be free by the time it gets there. How do you know about this planet? The Ojikos set up a deep space telescope and pointed it in the direction of that star cluster around 2,000 years ago. They found a planet in the Goldilocks zone of a yellow dwarf star with an oxygen-nitrogen atmosphere, gravity within 3% of Earth normal, and detected a substance like chlorophyll, plant life. Those observations were intermittent over a very long time because they also discovered a glass cloud, a remnant of a nebula, between the telescope and the star cluster. The cloud's movements obscures a clear view of the star cluster, except for a brief window roughly every 107 years. The planet appears only every 100 years? We're calling the place Brigadoon. What? You know, it's a mythical Irish village that is frozen in time, except it connects to our world once every 100 years. I remember it because the high school drama club wanted to perform Macbeth, but they did South Pacific instead. He blinked. What does Macbeth have to do with it? Brigadoon is in Macbeth, the Shakespeare play. I think. First, Brigadoon is in Scotland, not Ireland. Whatever. Second, there is no ancient myth about the place, and it is not in Macbeth at all, you numbskull. The whole story of Brigadoon was created for a Broadway musical in 1947. Again, whatever. Can you get any more ignorant? You cannot possibly imagine how ignorant I can be. I can't even. Well, this place sounds perfect. Being difficult to access is a bonus, not a problem. It is a problem for me. It is a pain in the ass for you, not an actual problem. Show me a star chart with the route from Earth to Brigadoon and from Brigadoon to Omaha. A hologram with a yellow line and a blue line appeared. The route to Omaha also requires two shortcuts. The second shortcut is different. Zoom in on the far end of that second shortcut. Okay, yeah, that's no good. You have the last shortcut connecting to the wormhole closest to Omaha. Yes, so? That limits the time and distance the task force has to fly. When you screw with the wormhole to create a shortcut, it interrupts the emergence schedule and someone might notice. We can't alert the enemy ahead of time that we're coming. This plan depends on the kiddies not knowing that Omaharacon is the target until our door-knocker ships emerge in the middle of their disruption field. Fine. Where do you want me to connect the shortcut? There is another wormhole 1.5 light-years farther away. Still no good. Both of the wormholes close to the target see a lot of traffic and are closely monitored. What about this one? I manipulated the hologram with my fingers. This one is 8 light-years from Omaha. Does it get much traffic? Hardly any traffic at all. It leads to a dead end. The Maxalts send ships through a couple times a year to check that no one is staging an invasion force on the other end of that wormhole. The Rebellion tried hiding a task force there, but there isn't any place their ships could refuel, so they bailed on it. Sounds perfect for us. Can you connect a shortcut to that wormhole? Yes, but that is another 7.5 light-years our ships will have to fly. Flying through empty, deep interstellar space does not pose a significant risk of being detected. I like it. Make that our route, please. Done. Joe, we have a solid offer of assistance from the Spiders. We have a secure staging and training base, and we have a plan with a 96% probability of success. You still don't look happy. I don't want to do this, Skippy. Well, don't worry about me. I know my job, and I'll execute the plan to the best of my ability. There is no way I will ever like this. Maybe you'll feel better after we activate the spinner and it does whatever it does. We have to find the spinner first, so don't start celebrating yet. Chapter 36. I never did tell the Rindaloo about my doubts. I never had to. They offered to provide material assistance, and I didn't immediately reply. That wasn't unexpected. If our roles had been reversed, they would have taken time to consider the offer. The difference was they would have pondered the offer for a decade or a century. I'm being unfair. The Rindaloo moved with lightning speed when they saw a need to take action to protect themselves. That was the key. The Spiders were traditionally reluctant to act when the stakes were only a small change to the balance of power in their endless war. They had been fighting the Maxalts for so long, they had seen the border lines on the map move back and forth, seen millions die, all for nothing in the end. The war continued, the death count climbed, and nothing of lasting consequence was accomplished. That was why the Jarraptha had gained so much influence. They were willing to step in and fight for territory while their patrons merely shrugged. It was different when the spiders, their old ones, saw a true threat to their existence. The Maxalts probably expected the spiders would discover the existence of the Doomsday fleet of Ark ships, but the kiddies figured they had plenty of time to complete, load, and launch those Ark ships before their ancient enemy even began to debate what, if anything, to do about the problem, even whether it was a problem. The Maxalts had been fatally wrong on their judgment. The Rindaloo had jumped in and cracked heads before the first Ark ship was ready. Now, the spiders were not only offering to help, they were urging me to get moving now. They did have one concern. Okay, many concerns, but one was a major showstopper. Minister Jastigelian was my contact, either because we already knew each other or no one else wanted to deal with the reckless, hasty cowboy human.
General Bishop, our support is contingent on you providing a workable plan for the employment of our forces.
Yeah, I understand that. The location of the target will be revealed when we are assembled at the staging base. The location of that base will be revealed when we arrive there.
That is understood, and while we are displeased, we agree that operational security is the paramount concern. I am referring to your lack of a plan to counter the Maxalt's fleet, since we will be attacking a regional fleet base. Our support does not extend to direct engagement with an enemy fleet.
I understand that also.
Do you really? The issue is a practical matter. Even if we did bring a war fleet, we cannot guarantee to establish and maintain supremacy in the space around the planet. Your assault carriers will be vulnerable to enemy raiders jumping in to launch hit-and-run attacks. Once the Maxalts realize the attack is an assault landing, not a simple bombardment, they will be willing to sacrifice their own ships to take out your assault carriers.
Yeah, I know that. Assault carriers were big, slow, fat, and clumsy targets. To shorten the distance their dropships had to fly, they typically operated in low orbit, exposed to ground fire, and as Jastigelian mentioned, hit-and-run attacks by enemy ships. Even a squadron of enemy destroyers could be a major problem for us. Destroyers weren't always equipped with railguns, and their maser cannons weren't the big-bore thunder guns of a battleship, but they carried the same type of missiles as a capital ship. She was correct that we couldn't risk sending in a landing force if we had to deal with both an SD network and a fleet. The fleet based at the target will have other concerns and be elsewhere when we attack. Spiders didn't have eyebrows. They could elongate their eyes vertically for a similar body language.
You have means to lure an enemy fleet away from the target?
Not right now, I don't, I admitted.
Then I don't see how we can proceed.
It won't be a problem.
How can...
I know a guy. We had to move fast. Not just because the outsider was somewhere busily constructing a portal to hell. The Rindaloo communication security could be trusted, but eventually the work they were doing to gather a task force of door knockers and arsenal ships would be noticed. Sims had proven that every significant operator suffered some level of information leakage, even if it was an unusual number of spare parts being requisitioned quickly for no apparent reason. That had been a red flag for Sims. She figured if there was not a known, sensible, and obvious reason for a large quantity of components being pulled from stores, then there had to be a secret reason. That someone was up to no good. Eventually, the Maxalts would discover their ancient enemy was once again, and shockingly, taking hasty action. ComSec at Earth could absolutely not be trusted. Assuming that DEFCOM approved my request for a task force, it would not be long before the entire galaxy was speculating about our target. Especially when everyone learned we were taking assault carriers with us, meaning we would be setting boots dirtside. Gasquet had suggested that we leak a false report that hinted at us planning to hit a Bosphorok target. I approved that idea. Of course, any campaign of disinformation had to wait for DEFCOM to hear my request that had to be deliberately vague, to approve an operation I couldn't tell them about, and to quickly assemble a task force. Before I could beg the Joint Chiefs for troops and ships, I had to ensure that Omaha would not be guarded by a fleet when we arrived. As I had told the spiders, I knew a guy. So Valkyrie flew to a Jarapta relay station, and Skippy uploaded code that would rapidly propagate through the network to find Scorandum. Actually, to confirm his location, he had left a trail of breadcrumbs for us to follow. Leaving a trail was a bit of a risk, but he was using an encryption scheme created by Skippy, so it was very unlikely anyone could understand the content of the messages. He was where we expected, aboard the ECO cruiser We Shall Not Speak of It, on a fact-finding mission at some colony world I couldn't have cared less about. We were in luck. The Admiral had been planning to depart the next day. He was understandably nervous about staying in any place for long. So far, no one had attempted to assassinate him that he knew of. That happy situation could change in a flash. "Admiral Scarandum," I called. "Would you please come aboard Valkyrie? I have an important matter to discuss." "That depends," he cocked his head. "Have you been tempted by the contract for my untimely demise?" "I'm not a gambling man, but I would rather be surprised when that happens." "I would rather it not happen at all, but..." His antennas dipped in a shrug. "As your great philosopher Mick Jagger said, you can't always get what you want." Scarandum was in Valkyrie's main conference compartment when I walked in. The center of the table had a rack that was filled with bottles containing various beverages, including plain and sparkling water. All of the bottles were set into padded holes in the base of the rack, since we were aboard a warship that might have to maneuver violently at any moment, and all objects had to be secured so they didn't become deadly projectiles. Really, that was bullshit. If an enemy ship jumped us in the middle of interstellar space, loose bottles flying around would be the least of our problems. The ECO Admiral had a glass in front of him, one of the heavy glasses that looked and felt like expensive crystal, but was made of some unbreakable plastic. It surprised me that the liquid in his glass was clear and fizzing. Also, the room didn't smell of fine vintage Bergoge. He was drinking sparkling water. What the hell? "The Bergoge," I pointed to a bottle in the rack, "isn't to your liking?" "As you requested, Skippy showed a simulation of your assault plan." His mandibles clicked together, agitated. "Your intention to assault a major regional fleet base is reckless, even for you. Even for me," he muttered. "At the moment, I do not feel like drinking anything. However, I am thirsty, so..." He picked up the glass in a claw and slurped. "That bad, huh?" I poured a glass of plain water for myself. "I do not see how this operation could be possible. Admittedly, I am no expert on combat operations. I prefer the battle to be won before the first shot is fired. What worries me, and I am surprised to see it apparently does not worry you, is that the Rindaloo also believe the proposed operation is not feasible. They apparently somehow can assist with knocking back the very formidable orbital defenses, but then you must contend with the Maxalt's fleet before you can even contemplate landing a force on the ground." "Your most generous patrons are correct." "Then why?" "It is impossible based on what they know. They do not know everything." "Ah, you have a plan?" "Sort of." "A plan to destroy an entire fleet?" "I must warn you, they will be wary of you using elder weapons again and will disperse their force to avoid providing you a worthy target. We will not be deploying elder weapons at Omaha. Doing that would risk destroying the planet, and we do not want to do that." "Then..." His antennas twitched. A happy gesture if I read Jarap the body language correctly. "You have a better plan?" "I hope so." "Is this a signature Joe Bishop plan?" "More like a signature Ottavio Scarandum plan, I hope." "Hmm?" One of his antennas stood up and twitched. "My plan is to subcontract the problem to an expert. You."
"Oh."
He reached for an empty glass and yanked the bottle of Bergoge out of its holder. "That I will drink to. Will you?" He looked at a bottle of bourbon. "Not yet, thanks. I have a lot more work to get done today." "Your loss." He drank half the glass in one gulp, then belched loudly, filling the room with a simply delightful aroma. "What do you need me to do?" "Lure the hegemony fleet away from Omaharicon. They know we're planning to strike somewhere. Skippy will leak false documents to lead the Maxalts to believe we are most likely to go into action against the Bosphorak." Scarandum was not impressed. "Even if they trust your conveniently leaked documents, the hegemony will only respond with a token force. They will be concerned that an invasion of a client world will be for the purpose of luring a major hegemony force into combat, where we can significantly degrade their combat power by using elder weapons." "We are not really counting on them believing the cover story. We know the presence of the outsider has caused the Maxalts to revise their strategy for responding to threats against their clients. Basically, they'll not allow themselves to be distracted, as you said."
"That is wise."
He paused, then slowly set the glass down.
"Skippy knows the strategic thinking of the Maxalts how."
"That's not important."
"It is rather important," he insisted.
"That was a polite way of saying I am not going to reveal that secret to you."
Your honesty is appreciated. Is your plan a secret? To everyone but you, yes, that's the point. Of course. What I have is not so much a plan as a goal. I'll tell you what I want, and you figure out how to make it happen. Skorandum's mandibles drooped. In that case, I might need another bottle. What is it you want? Like I said, to lure the hegemony fleet away from Omaharakon, within a specific time window. We can wait for that fleet to deploy out of the system, but we can't wait forever. He pondered the problem. You want me, somehow, to make the Maxults believe your force will strike elsewhere, against a more important target, one they will feel compelled to defend? Yes, exactly. Also, the target has to be something that would require us to deploy a ground force. The threat can't be just from flying ordnance. The lure has to explain why we have included assault carriers in our task force. May I assume this fake target must also be close to Omaharakon, so the fleet base there will be required to deploy? That's correct. In that case, he took only a moderate sip of his beverage. I suggest the research complex on Parchland. He must have read the blank look on my face, because he added, It is a Maxulk's world, approximately 73 light-years from Omaharakon. The complex is a civilian facility. Your people might call it a corporate research park. Some of the most important recent innovations in Maxulk's technology have come from Parchland. That is, those they didn't steal from other species, he added. As a civilian corporate facility, it is not heavily defended. It should be, but the corporations and residents don't want to pay the additional taxes to be protected by a full SD network. They also wish to have minimal government oversight, so a substantial fleet presence is definitely not desired. Really, that world is not much at risk of being targeted by an enemy force. It has few natural resources, a small population, its location is not strategic, and a fleet is relatively close for a rapid response. A threat for you to assault Parchland would not be considered credible, except if the Maxults think we believe some high-tech device at the research park is necessary for defeating the outsider. In that case, they would certainly respond by increasing security there. The quickest way to do that would be deploying ships from Omaharakon. That sounds good. Can you work with Skippy on creating some false message traffic and whatever that will lead the Maxults to believe Parchland is our target? I will. To sell the story, I suggest your Navy establish a small presence of sensor frigates near Parchland to monitor the security situation. It would be helpful if your frigates were somewhat careless and their presence was detected. Ugh, I hate it when that happens. Okay, let me think about the timing. That could work. Valkyrie has to go there for Skippy to plant the message traffic. We could bring a Star Carrier with a handful of sensor frigates. Joe, Skippy appeared. I have a suggestion. Go ahead. Since I am going to be there anyway, and I will need to hack into their crappy low-grade network, I can plant code that will make their long-range sensors believe they detect the presence of UN Navy frigates. No actual ships have to be there. I like the way you think. Skorandum raised his glass to Skippy. Outstanding, I agreed. I want as many sensor pickets as we can get at Omaha. Dividing our force is asking for more trouble than we already have. Admiral, thank you for working with us. The Maxulks already hate you. When they hear you are involved in this operation, they... Your people have an expression. Haters gotta hate. I wear the hatred of our enemy with pride. He puffed up his thorax. That's good. I lifted the bottle of Bagoge and topped off his glass. Because there is one other little thing I want you to do for us. The Joint Chiefs went through a roller coaster of reactions when Valkyrie returned to Earth. They were alarmed to hear that the outsider had stolen not one, but two deep space antenna arrays, and they were shocked when I told them evidence showed the alien entity had been active for at least 7 years. Even before I explained why the arrays had been stolen, the chiefs understood the reason: to construct a doorway for an intergalactic invasion. Of course, they were pleased to hear I finally had a plan to stop, possibly even to destroy, the outsider. They were definitely not happy that I couldn't actually explain the plan to them and that I needed to borrow a substantial portion of the Navy with no questions asked. It helped my case that I promised to provide all details to the task force commanders once we assembled at the remote staging and training base. It would have been great to mention that we were getting material assistance from the Rindaloo, but that had to remain a secret. Oh, and I also needed an assault landing force, thank you very much. That was a problem, one that couldn't be quickly or easily solved. Troops were available, both Army Space Cavalry units and UN Marines. A sufficient number of expeditionary assault units were available and conditioned for deployment within 72 hours. That included all the gear and supplies the Cav and Marines would need to accomplish an orbital assault and sustain the force dirtside for 5 weeks. That last part wasn't necessary. We wouldn't be keeping boots on the ground for more than a few hours, hopefully less than an hour. People and their gear weren't the problem. There weren't enough hulls to transport them. Of the assault carriers in active service, only three were in a state to be deployed within 72 hours. The carriers Adriatic Sea and Baltic Sea were at Earth, just recently having completed workups following a refit. The only other assault carrier in flight-worthy condition was the Flying Dutchman, deployed with the Mavericks at Hefustria. The lack of assault transport ships wasn't a new issue. The Gator Navy historically got no respect and had to scrounge for resources. While Big Navy focused on the glamorous space control and orbital bombardment missions, the ships that were dedicated to landing grubby boots on the ground were given lower priority. That fact had led to a long-standing feud between the Army and Navy, with the Army lobbying for direct control of assault transport resources since the Navy pukes clearly weren't getting the job done. It wasn't my role to mediate an inter-service dispute. It was my burden to adjust the plan to proceed with two fewer assault carriers than we wanted. Could the operation succeed with only three carriers? Yes, with no margin for error. A landing force with only three assault transports was not a credible threat to any planet with reasonable defenses, though Reed and Gasquet pointed out that actually worked in our favor. The Maxalts would never believe we would hit a regional base with such a weak force, but a raid against a corporate research facility like Parchland? That was very believable. I gratefully accepted the inclusion of the Adriatic Sea and Baltic Sea, though those ships would not be under my command. The Special Mission Group wasn't set up to effectively manage a large force, so the strike group would be under the command of a two-star admiral with the designation of Task Force Hammer. Really, some staff officer must have been overeager about interpreting an instruction or just thought the name was cool, because the word Hammer was all capital letters in the message that established the detached command. It was a relief to me that I only had to be responsible for the special operations cowboy nonsense while other people would lead the strike force and the landing force. The entire operation was given the code name of Olympic, again initially in all caps. Speaking of the landing force, there was no question about who should command. Emily Perkins. It was an obvious choice. She had the only real experience with conducting opposed landings going back over a decade. The Mavericks and Dave Chaika's mercenaries were experienced, in peak readiness, and available. It was good timing that the UN force was scheduled to pull their boots off of Fustria so their gear should be packed up. Plus, the Flying Dutchman was the best command and control platform in the Navy because of Nagatha. 98 hours. That's how long it took between Valkyrie jumping in and Task Force Hammer being ready to jump away. Battleships and battle cruisers, cruiser squadrons, destroyer escorts, sensor frigates, a pair of assault carriers, a pair of mobile space dock ships, and enough star carriers to haul the force to the edge of the galaxy and back. We set a rendezvous place and time near where Skippy would create the first shortcut. Those coordinates were given only to Admiral Allard in a file that would only decrypt itself after the task force went outbound through the backstop wormhole. While the ships of Hammer Force plodded along to the rendezvous point, I ordered Reed to take Valkyrie to Hefustria. We would fly fast. You know what would travel faster? The news that humans had sent out a powerful task force to work with the merry band of pirates. Ottavio Scarandum wanted to relax. He deserved to relax after yet another triumph of sketchiness. The operation to lure the Hegemony's fleet away from Omahara Khan would begin with Valkyrie slipping unnoticed into the Parchland star system, where Skippy would upload malware into the planet's communication system. Malware that was, over Skippy's objections, carefully, deliberately flawed so it would be detected. Detected in a way that would point to Skippy being an absent-minded screw-up. Bishop had seemed to particularly enjoy that aspect of the malware infiltration. Scarandum's next task was not to participate in the actual assault on Omahara Khan. That role was best restricted to those who were experts in violence, rather than in avoiding the need for conflict. Bishop had urged Scarandum to go to Jarap the Home Fleet headquarters to brief his own people on the events on Omahara Khan after that battle was over, one way or another. In the meantime, while he waited for word that the human task force had struck, He was aboard the ECO patrol cruiser, if you forget hard enough it never happened, drifting near a relay station. Any courier ship carrying news of the shocking events at Omaharacon would pass by that station along a route to the homeworld. Being near the relay station was convenient. Too convenient. It was tempting, in fact. That was why Scarandum had selected that particular station. He was bored. Boredom was a temptation by itself. While he waited, he took the opportunity to contact the station to place a substantial wager, secretly, of course. The wager was under a false identity he had set up decades before, holding out for just such a golden opportunity. An opportunity to finally break his string of miserable losses, even if he had to break one of his own rules. It was cheating, yes, and the win would be less sweet because he would know it was tainted by inside information, but it would be a rare win. He was sick of losing, and his savings could use a boost. The recent manipulation of Skipcoin had given only a temporary boost to his finances. Quietly, without knowledge of the Forget Hard's crew, he placed a wager. That the humans had discovered a type of Elder artifact, one that could be used to destroy the Outsider, and that among five possible locations where such an artifact could be found was the research park on the planet named Parchland. Brigadoon was nice. There were not any quaint Scottish villages and sadly no whiskey distilleries or golf courses, but the place was perfect as a training site, and as a future secure human colony if we were ever able to stop the Outsider. The hemisphere we designated as North was experiencing a fading ice age. Skippy estimated the glaciers there had already been retreating for over 1,000 years. The southern hemisphere was warm, and that's where we set up a training site. Engineering units down there created a crude mock-up of the Maxalt's base the assault force would be seizing. All my knowledge of the planet was from reports and video. There hadn't been time for me to make a trip dirtside. A dropship was kept busy flying me between Valkyrie, the battleship Gibraltar that was Admiral Allard's flagship, and the Flying Dutchman was acting as Perkins's command ship for the assault force. It was aboard Gibraltar that I briefed the task force leaders on the Spinner, the Collector, which was codenamed the Watsis, and the target, Omaharacon. Before every person present could protest that a Maxalt's regional fleet base was an impossible target, I explained we would be getting help from the Spiders. Actual material assistance, not just intel and moral support. The Rindaloo task force would be joining us at a rendezvous point after we left Brigadoon. They had politely refused my request to join us at the staging site. Their communications security was not a risk, they assured me, in an arrogant and condescending manner that made it clear humans were the junior partner in our temporary alliance and I should keep my mouth shut. My instinct was to tell the Spiders to go, you know, but Skippy argued that was not the hill I should choose to die on. Their comsec really is excellent, Joe, he had told me. Especially now they have stepped up their game to prevent me from reading their messages. You can't break their encryption? Dude, he laughed. Please, as if. It is a bit more difficult for me to crack their current schemes. Still, it is not any sort of a challenge. The point is, no way can the dum-dum kitties read spider message traffic. The location of the target is secure. We're good. Skippy had been wrong about that. I should have asked more questions. During the initial briefing, Skippy showed a hologram that ran through the attack plan, from the initial long-distance recon to the last UN ship jumping away from Omaha. There were a lot of questions. Aboard Gibraltar, we addressed the Navy's concerns, and they did raise some very good points. The attack plan was adjusted to make it better, to reduce risk. Most of the changes were to make the plan more realistic. Navy ships and personnel did not actually perform in the flawlessly reliable way they did in Skippy's wargame model. The meeting broke up for lunch, which meant Allard had sandwiches brought in for his staff so they could continue the discussion. Perkins and the ground assault leaders went over to the Flying Dutchman to conduct their own analysis and discussion. That left me to eat lunch by myself in a borrowed office while I caught up on paperwork. After lunch, 3 hours after lunch, Allard asked to speak with me in the conference room. We have a plan. He glanced around the table, receiving nods from all of his subordinate commanders. Dependent on 2 conditions. Instead of speaking, I nodded and held up my hands in a go-ahead gesture. The Spiders have to deliver, he continued. The simulation was a pretty show. He gestured to the hollow projection that was frozen at the point where the Rindaloo Arsenal ships came through the gap created by the door knockers.
The task force stands off at a safe distance until we confirm the Omaha SD network is degraded as promised.
Agreed. Will you position stealth frigates within a few light seconds of the battle space to confirm the SD network status in real time?
Yes.
Allard gestured to the Commodore, who had led the squadron of sensor frigates.
The forward pickets will carry two Elder comm nodes to provide FTL comms. Bishop, between you and me, I find it incredible that the Spiders are doing anything.
To crack a strategic defense network like the Sim shows?
He shook his head.
Astonishing. The Spiders successfully struck a tougher target when they destroyed the Doomsday Ark ship fleet.
So they say. Do we have any evidence it happened the way they claim?
The question surprised me. I hadn't expected it. The Maxalks, sadly, lack sensor data of the incident. We know their Doomsday fleet and the Ark ship construction facilities were destroyed. I have no reason to suspect the Spiders aren't telling us the truth. The loss of that Doomsday fleet, the almost casual way the Rindaloo crushed it, could be part of the problem we're facing now.
How do you figure that?
Well, the Kiddies claim they have a natural destiny to rule the galaxy. The truth is, their boasting is a defensive reaction. They know they're inferior to the Rindaloo in every way that matters. The Spiders badly hurt the Kiddies' fragile egos when they smashed the Ark ship fleet. In my opinion, the Maxalks are allied with the Outsider because they know the alternative is their slow decline into irrelevance.
The enemy of their enemy is their friend?
Something like that. They're too stupid to see that after Godzilla stomps on the house of their enemy, the monster will come for them next.
You mentioned a second condition?
It didn't bother me that Allard was placing conditions on Operation Olympic. He and Perkins would have to make it work. All I cared about is we got the Collector with minimum casualties.
The assault carriers don't jump into orbit until we confirm we have supreme control of the space around Omaha. That can't happen if the Maxalks have a fleet in system.
Their fleet based there. Currently their 14th strike group will be occupied elsewhere at the time we hit Omaharicon.
You have a plan to lure that fleet away?
I don't, but I know a guy. Here's what I can say. We won't approach the target until after the 14th Fleet has deployed elsewhere. If they don't take the bait, we... I bit my lip. We don't throw away lives for nothing.
I don't see it, General Perkins declared flatly, looking up from the holographic tank to meet my eyes. Allard had given his conditional approval. Next, I had to get Perkins and her commanders to buy in. So we were assembled in the Flying Dutchman's main conference room where we had just watched a war game sim of the landing. She wasn't hostile. She wasn't accusing me of negligence or stupidity. She was also, based on what she knew, absolutely correct.
The target itself is manageable, assuming the Spiders can open the door for us upstairs.
She paused for me to comment on exactly how the hell the Rindaloo planned to do that. I declined to provide information that wasn't needed, since at the moment I was talking to the people responsible for ground operations and not the people responsible for establishing space supremacy around Omaha. So she continued.
We can get enough boots on the ground to take out the base defenses, establish a secure perimeter, search for and acquire the Watsis.
She paused again. No one enjoyed not knowing the nature of the object their soldiers and Marines were tasked with seizing from a very hostile opposition.
And to cover an egress. What we can't do is secure that base and prevent counterattacks from the 9 other military bases that are within 200 kilometers.
The other senior officers around the holo tank nodded agreement.
This will be a one-sided slaughter.
After a beat, she added,
Sir, focus on the base the Kiddies call Makalva. We have designated it as Delta 7, I said. The other bases will not be a problem.
General Kaminsky of the UN Marines disagreed.
Those bases are all protected by dense energy shields. We can't quickly neutralize them with an orbital railgun bombardment. Just the 3 other bases that are in the ring around the city can hit us with 17,000 troops and mech suits.
Plus drones, aircraft, ground skimmers, even good old-fashioned indirect fires.
Well, those bases will not be...
Excuse me,
Kaminsky interrupted. The guy was also a 2-star, and he had more time in grade than me.
You were a grunt once, but your boots won't be on the ground here.
I was a grunt, and that's why you should trust me when I say the enemy force at those other bases will not present a problem for you.
I held up a hand to forestall other objections. Before we land, before your people hit Atmo, Admiral Allard's battleships will be neutralizing those bases. Atomic compression warheads will knock out the base shields, then our battleships will follow up with railguns. There was a gasp from the audience.
We're using nukes? Perkins asked, shocked. Technically ACs, I use the UN acronym for atomic compression devices, are not nukes. They yield very minimal long-term radiation. That's why those weapons were deployed. They're still nukes, she insisted. The physics involved are a technicality. A technicality window we can fly a starship through, and we're doing that. The Joint Chiefs know about this? About the specific use? No. I shook my head. We can't request authority specifically for Omaha without alerting the kiddies to our target. I already have authority under Section 3 of the Charter that established the Special Mission Group. You already stretched your authority when you deployed Elder weapons. Kaminsky's expression was sour. He played by the rules. I didn't, and that didn't set right with him. I could live with that. Perkins still couldn't believe what I'd said. Do the Rindaloo know you plan to drop nukes on their historical enemy? An enemy that is not known to be at all stable and reasonable? It was their suggestion to use AC weapons. That promoted another gasp, even more shocked. How did you convince them to... I didn't convince them of anything. The impression I got is this is the point when the spiders have had enough of the Maxalks. The kiddies have this sick myth that they are special, and that myth is so vital to their entire identity that not too long ago they were preparing to initiate a doomsday plan that would trigger sentinels to rain hellfire on every species in the galaxy. The spiders stopped that plan, and at the time they decided on mercy rather than punishment. They hoped the kiddies would learn something. Now the spiders have concluded the kiddies are not able to learn anything unless the lesson is pounded into their fucking heads with a baseball bat. Or a nuke. What I was told is the suggestion.